Hi, I'm Kim.
And I'm Tora.
And this is our podcast, newly relabeled Kicking It With Kim and Tora. Thank you so much for joining us today. As you know, we have a new format, four topics, 15 minutes each. And with that said, we're going to dig right into the first topic. And our first topic tonight, Tora, is Africa. You wanted to talk about what's going on in Africa?
I definitely do, because right now Africa, South Africa is, I mean, what they're showing us is it's burning. And I had two ways I feel about it. Some of it, I'm a little sad because I see that some Black businesses are taking, you know, casualties in this, you know, I guess it's a new apartheid, you know, it's falling under that. And, but there's 95% of these are corporate people that are being kicked out and asked to leave, which I'm proud of, because I can never get over the fact that Africa is 100% Black, and it's been taken over by big businesses. It's been taken over by corporations. It's been taken over by foreigners. And I hate it. I absolutely hate it. So when I see that it has to be, in my words, torn down to be rebuilt, I'm like, go for it, go for it. You know, a lot of people might not like that. And like, why do you have to tear things down? Why do you have to? You taught them that. The originator of destruction taught them to burn it all down, destroy it all, and rebuild it as your own. So why should we take anything less? You know?
So, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's an easier way to take your country back if the Western countries would stay out of it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Zimbabwe, a former president, Robert Mugabe, wanted to give all the land back to the African citizens, because when the countries were colonized, the white folks had all the land, the Black folks had nothing. And the West came in and started doing sanctions and all this and that. And they do too much, but that's really all that needs to happen in South Africa, is they need to redistribute the land back to the Black Africans who have been pushed out of land. And I think that that would pretty much resolve the problem. I don't necessarily think you should burn down to rebuild. I think they should just, like in Gambia, the former president Yahya Jammeh came up with a rule that no white people could have bars on the beach. And in order to operate a bar on the beach, you have to at least partner. Only Gambians could do it, or you could do it in partnership with Gambians. So there are ways to just say to them, look, give us our stuff back. You colonize our land, our country.
I think when it's there, they don't give it up that easy. I feel like that's what war is about. I don't believe no one who lives in a mansion, owns a big factory, is gonna just walk away from it. I don't believe that. I mean, that's just my opinion. Don't believe you would hand over, not you, but people hand over their empires, their wealth that easy and say, okay, you're right, we stole it, we robbed it, we took it, we kicked you out, you can have it back. I don't believe that. I believe you have to say no.
I'm not suggesting that they would voluntarily give it back. I'm suggesting that the government decree that we're taking it back and we're redistributing it to the original people that land belongs to. In Gambia, even till today, there are no white-owned bars on the beach. Now, they have a new president, so that may change, but he just made a rule. You can't do it. I'm not going to allow you to do it, and nobody's doing it. But you know, in South Africa, they're not rioting because of land distribution or anything like that.
No, they're not rioting
because the former president of the country was put in jail.
Yeah, he was put in jail, and they wanted him to go in front of a committee and you know, basically degrade him and sanction him, and he wasn't going for it. So they rose up in support of him. So my thing is this: in the uprising, they said, "Hey, you know what?" They went into the prisons.
You sent me that. They let people out of the prisons.
Mm-hmm. They didn't let them out. They broke in there and let them out.
That's what I mean. People who were protesting broke into the prisons and let them out.
And I knew that was going to happen. And I kept saying to everybody who would listen, this is going to trickle down because people are thinking, everybody's thinking the same thing. It's not fair. You're not playing by the same game and the same rules. You're telling us to play by. So no one wants to listen anymore. No one's going to listen anymore. Once social media showed the world that everyone else in the world is not playing by the same rules, that they game the game that they've laid down for us all to play, no one else is playing it, it's not going to work anymore.
It never did. It was always that way. And we always knew it. Like you said, apartheid in South Africa. And in apartheid, the whites took all the abundant land and put all the blacks into shanty towns. And that has been going on for a long time. We knew that back in college. We were protesting for the university to divest its funds from South Africa.
But minute cared to watch and see. Now, the world has to care and the world is seeing. I don't believe that the television portrayed it the way it should have been portrayed. I don't think media portrayed it and even gave it's just due. But social media, the new world order that we're under, where Big Brother is on 24/7, you can't deny it anymore. From your 12-year-old to your 21-year-old to your 50-year-old to your 90-year-old, we all see it now. So now everybody sees the injustice that's been happening. Yes, we knew it, but it wasn't in your face.
Maybe everybody just wasn't aware. We always knew it. We protested for divestiture. We protested. I literally got out and marched against apartheid. We knew. We talked about it all the time. We called it a modern day Jim Crow that was happening in South Africa. We knew loud and clear, and we fought against it. So I don't think this, well, maybe social media has allowed other people to know it, but we've known it for a very long time.
That's my point. My point is social media. I go back to the George Floyd when I watched everyone in every single country get out in the street and say, I cannot breathe. That to me let me know the world was watching. Now, when that was just one tragedy. Now imagine another mass tragedy that gets captured and the people that will come out and support. That's what I believe this is. There's so much support now because everybody knows, like you heard about it, you read about it. So the media lets you see some of it. Yeah, I knew about the parts. I knew that we boycotted Nike. I knew that we boycotted Coca-Cola. I knew about all of that. But the world that I was in, nobody cared to know. Now the world.
Oh, well, the world I was in, we cared to know, and we knew. And we talked about it. We protested. We did everything we could think to do. And apartheid has been over for a long time, but Mandela talked about redistributing the land, but he never did a daggone thing.
That's my point.
And so, but I've always, I don't feel like I know any more than I used to know, but I do think you raise a valid point that there are a lot of people who didn't know, or maybe just heard about it. And now
even if they knew, it wasn't so gut-wrenching back to them like it is now.
It was to us. Because Black people needed a pass. In apartheid, Black people needed a pass akin to a passport to travel from one town to another. It was horrible to us. We knew all of that, and it was a problem.
Just because Black people know, we can make things move. But when the world knows and the world doesn't like it.
Laura, I don't think apartheid is a good example. I think that I agree with you about social media bringing things to the forefront, but the whole world knew about apartheid.
The whole world didn't know about apartheid.
It was in our faces. It was a major crisis. Mm-hmm. It was in the 80s. We all protested, divested, all that kind of stuff.
But the impact shows that the impact shows that people were not willing to just risk their life and all.
But they did.
There's a big white Germany, white people in Germany fighting for these people. You didn't see white people in Italy fighting for these. You didn't see white people in Spain. Now you see people across the world saying.
I did see it back then. I did see the mass riots in Soweto and them gunning people down. I was aware of all of that. It was a really big thing back then.
You saw white people gunning white people down?
I saw white people in South Africa gunning down black people.
That's what I'm saying. That's original. That's original. Now it's white people helping black people fight for this right and getting.
How are they doing that? Because the last things I've seen, the white people are now crying and complaining.
No, those are the ones who are losing everything or crying. I'm talking about people who have.
I mean, like in the last 6 months, if you go back to social media, you see now they have begun showing stories of white South Africans who were living in poverty, which was unheard of before, because the black people have been regaining their rights. So this has been going on from my perspective for a long time. And the reason they're burning and rioting and everything is not because of any of the land distribution, is really because of the jailing of the president. But maybe
through that was just like the straw that broke the camel's back. But through that, people are like, and we're sick and tired of being sick and tired. So it was like a whole manifestation that just came to a head. I mean, yes, the president definitely was the you know, Pandora's box that opened. But once it was open, all this other stuff and all these other emotions.
And so what are white people doing in support of them? Because, you know, I don't find...
I mean, from what I've been hearing and reading, I haven't heard... I mean, of course, the white folks, and well, I call them the corporate white folks, because they're the only people that stand to lose. If you're in poverty, then you definitely understand why these people are rioting, because they're like, look, you know, this we're 90% or 99% here, and we own 1% of nothing. So I understand there are white people around the world who understand that. And I've been hearing them speak on social media, like, look, people, get out of their country. Like, you can't pretend that you're a white South African or a white African.
I've been hearing that debate. Yes, yeah. I've been hearing. You're right.
And I'm proud for them to say that. I'm like, thank you for saying that, because I know that. Now you know that, and I'm glad you're saying it, because now you don't sound as ignorant as everybody else who's like, but they're African. No, you're not.
Yeah, as ignorant as everybody.
I can't say I'm Asian. Even if my parents were in the military and for some reason they gave birth to me in Asia, that I can't claim Asian. I can't say I'm Asian. I am Black, you know, and I would be Black, United States, American Black. And that's that. So you can't just be born in Africa and then all of a sudden you want to say that you're African because you're Caucasian. That's just not right to me.
But you know, the white South Africans, I was trying to find that thing, the video to show you, they're looting too. But just like the mainstream media does here, they're doing that in South Africa as well. They only show the Black people and use it as an opportunity to say they're taking TVs and tennis shoes or whatever, but they never show that white people loot too, and they are looting now.
Even if they do show it, the narrative isn't the same. It's they're surviving. You know, they're doing this. You know, they'll show it, but they'll put sugar on top of it. So it's one of those things where I know that that can't withstand but so much longer. We can't keep seeing that play over and over and over, and people are actually sitting there like, that's right. The world's like, come on, you just showed us this Caucasian person stealing, and then you showed us a Black person stealing, and you say this person is surviving, but this person is looting and destroying and is a thug or you know, a hooligan, but this person, you know, is strong and resilient to withstand what they're like. People are getting sick of that, you know? I think they're getting sick of it.
Well, I hope they are, because we do need to change the narrative, but we're not in control of media. But I hope they're getting sick of it to the point that, you know, it makes a change.
We're having our say.
And then people come out and provide, you know, promote their own narrative or something.
We're having our say. And I think that having our say and using our voice to, you know, express what we see or what we think we see until someone comes along and shows us differently, I think we got it. You know, I think we got it. I think there are people out there who care and people out there who are fed up. And I know for a fact that I know what you're saying about the apartheid might be a bad example, but I feel like that was a painful past for the world of Black people in a whole, not just Africans, but in a whole.
It was,
but I felt like no one did anything great to not let that ever happen again. I feel like they,
you know, the whole thing did change because there was, they put Mandela in as president, and they had, I can't remember that guy's name, but they had them in as co-presidents for a while, and then Mandela came. So, you know, I don't know, but I think South Africa in apartheid maybe isn't the best example, but I do understand what you're saying, even with regard to George Floyd, because even in the Gambia, I saw a picture, a painting of him on a wall, you know, and I did see people around the globe. So I do understand what you're saying, that perhaps social media is changing things, and maybe that's has a lot to do with why they're censoring so much.
Does have a 9.9% of the why they're censoring, because they realize people are catching feelings, mm-hmm. and they don't like it. They don't like it.
All right, that's topic number one. Topic number two is Dr. Cornel West and Harvard University. What do you think about that current news story?
I mean, I am a fan to the end of Dr. Cornel West. I love everything he talks about. When he speaks, I feel like he touches my soul. And I'm just so upset because he resigned, and it's not really out there, but we all are speculating. It's because of censorship again. You know, he says things that they don't want being repeated to the masses. And he's able to speak to those intellectual, intelligent white folks who are willing to listen and then do something about it and change the world. And they don't want that world change. They need to keep breeding the good old boys. And I think that he was changing that. I think he was changing the Ivy League boys. And I think he was letting them know that, you know, if you're gonna be part of the problem and not part of the solution, then really, what are you? And that critical thinking was not working for them. So I believe they pressured him and put their, as they do, foot on his neck. And he couldn't take, I'm not gonna say he can't take it, because he can pretty much take anything. But I just think that also, he knows his knowledge is better served somewhere else. I think he's going to end up at a HBCU or any other college. But I believe that Ivy League, which I'm glad, because I actually said that. Like, why isn't this intelligent man at a HBCU? We need that knowledge too. But I saw where he was going with his knowledge. I saw that he was trying to educate that part of life, which I'm also respecting. You know how I feel about that.
He's always been. Didn't he teach at Princeton before that?
I believe so.
At Princeton before he went to Harvard. So the official story that I heard earlier today or at some point was that he resigned because Harvard refused to offer him tenure. Mm-hmm. So he's been there long enough that he's at the point where he should be getting tenure now. They did not offer him tenure, so he resigned. But even as I was listening to you, I'm thinking, also, this censorship could be involved, because the reason they're not offering tenure is because of the things that he's saying. So it still comes right back around. Wanting to silence or mute him on certain topics. And
how would you let someone intelligent like that go? How? Why would you? He has so much to offer.
You know, I stopped following. I used to love Dr. Cornel West. I stopped following him some years back, but it was a time we had a lot of people like Eric Michael Dyson. All of them. I used to follow all of them all the time. I never listen to them anymore. That doesn't mean I don't respect them. I just don't follow them anymore. But in this vein, I saw an article that a Black woman, well, it's not an article, it's a video, that a Black woman did about that, sort of saying something like what you're saying, that we really need to be careful, not we, but those scholars and all of us professionals who have skills and education need to be careful about where you're sending it to, because she was saying in the case of Harvard that people, and I'm not saying this is true, I'm just sharing her viewpoint. Absolutely. She was saying that people think it's the board of trustees and people like that who run the university. She said, but ultimately it's the alumni. Because the alumni are given the donor dollars, and they'll say something like, oh, okay, you're going to give him tenure. We're not going to fund whatever this year because we don't agree with that. So they will cut him off in order to, you know, wipe
it. The president is not running the show.
That dollar bill is so mighty to them. And then that brought to mind also, in line with what you're saying, There is a woman, her name is Nicole Hannah Jones, and University of North Carolina offered her a teaching position and she rejected it. And I think it just says she went to an HBCU, but I think she went to Howard. I'm not sure which one, but I think that people are, and I love this, are beginning to be of the mindset, we need to go where we're going to be treated fairly. Like Dr. West, you put in all that time, he's doing the publishing. That's a requirement for tenure. I'm sure he's meeting all the criteria, bam, 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 bam. But now it's time to make that ultimate decision and you won't pull the trigger. And look, he's stuck. So she's like, no, thank you. I'm going to go somewhere where they respect me. When my time comes, I at least have a fair shot of getting what I'm
absolutely
doing.
And they're born scholars. So they want to teach, but it's like.
Now let's take this quick moment to recognize our sponsors. Now back to the current episode.
They need to teach up. At this point in time, I think we need everybody to come back home.
And like you're saying too, we need them to teach our athletes too, but we need them to teach our children too. Our children, HBCU, historically Black, that means the majority of them are Black. I went to Harvard, the majority of them are white. You're not teaching, there's a little few of us that you're teaching, like Professor Derek Bell was there when I was there. Just a little bit of us that he was teaching, but it's really primarily white people. And then that's where I always say, it's not our job to educate them. Let's educate ourselves so that we can get going and get ourselves in position.
That's funny you said that, because this, not to go off topic real quick, but Tammy and I, we were at a just a regular gymnastics practice, and we were talking about HBCUs. And I'll never forget, like, it was about 7 or 8 of our white colleague friends or associates, she would never call them
like parents, other parents.
Mm-hmm. And that we were talking and they said, can we excuse, 1 second, what is HBCU? And I never forget the look, and I wish we had brought this up when she was on. Tammy's face dropped, like, and I was just
how
looking.
How can you not know that?
And I did not even know how to tell them, because I would have went in, you know, she was like, you know, she said just what you said, historically Black college. But I was thinking more so like what it is, you know, not just historic, not just Black, not just college, but, you know, how it was founded. And that's what I was thinking about. Like, okay, well, it was colleges, like Ivy League colleges and regular college, who did not let Black kids in and would not give them a good education. And from there, we had to, you know, get our own college. Like, I was going with that, and Tammy just like, nah, we're not educating them. HBCU means historically Black college. And I just remember looking at her going, do we educate them? Do we?
Yeah, like, go look it up.
Yeah, and that's basically what it was left with, like, you know, go look it up. But I really wanted to educate and was like, let them know how it, you know, derived, but we didn't do it.
I agree. You know, I've always been of the viewpoint that the time for educating anybody else is past. Yeah. We need our resources back. We need our professionals back around, our students, so they can have an example to look up to, see the best. Like you said, imagine the brilliance of a Dr. Cornell West at North Carolina A&T. Or something like that, and all the Morehouse and all those brilliant young minds coming through and coming into contact and having access to him as a mentor. The bright and the cream of the crop, you know, usually get references from professors, recommendations. So that's a whole world that's been closed off to our kids But that, you know, that is the tradition, that is the trajectory of Black America. Yeah. We were segregated because we had to be. Then the doors opened and we went running in because we had never been able to go. And now we're all, I've done it a little earlier, but.
And the money, they offer more money than what normally, you know, a Black position could give That's you. True. So it was, you know, it was kind of like they knew what to do to get you.
And the prestige is one thing to say, I teach at Harvard. It's to us, see, I'm Black oriented. To me, if you say you teach at Spelman or Morehouse, I'm still going to be like, what?
And that I believe changed, because I'm like that too. Like, it doesn't impress me to say you're at Princeton, Harvard, or any of those Ivy League. It doesn't impress. I believe when I was way younger, definitely, oh my God, that would have been a dream for me to be that intelligent. But now that I'm older, it doesn't even, like that, what? Like you said, Spelman, Clark, Morehouse, you know, Howard University, you know, all of those colleges.
I think it was beneficial for us to go to those universities to have that experience, to show them, no, dear, we're not affirmative action babies. We run circles around you mentally, okay? So have a seat. I think all that was important, but I think what we need now is as a race is that unity and coming together and sharing our knowledge with each other. The only one thing I have a concern about, because I keep hearing people talk about coming together in our own towns, and we can't, I'm not comfortable with that, because we know how many they burned down, sunk under rivers and all that. So I'm like, I don't know what the answer to that part is, but you know, I don't know about gathering all
that knowledge and that history. Man, I'm telling you, it is painful. When I saw how many towns they sunk, it was like, okay, we knew about two, I think, you know, and then after that, this girl put a whole collage video together, and it was like 15.
But did you see all the towns they burned? The only ones we really know about are probably Rosewood
and Black
Wall Street. There's a whole map. There was Wilmington. They have broken apart. They just, so, I mean.
That's why I said with Africa going back, like, we have to tear it down like they did and rebuild it. Because they were thriving towns.
I don't know, Tora. I guess we're going to see. I mean, I think that we have a lesson. Well, it's a little different. I think that burning down white, we shouldn't be on that anymore, but I think that burning down white businesses in South Africa is different than how they rioted here and burned down the buildings in their establishments in their own community.
Oh, no, I'm totally.
So we'll have to see how all that plays out.
I'm totally against destroying your home. I'm totally against destroying your very own home. That's like cutting off your nose to spite your face. No, I'm saying if there is a organization that is not hiring you, not educating you, not feeding you, and it literally is imprisoning you and it's standing in your way of trying to accomplish your goals and dreams, okay, yeah, let's get rid of it. Get it out of here.
Okay. I mean, hey, I don't know. We're going to see what the aftermath is. I don't know, but it is true that most of those businesses would have to just by definition be white owned, because those are the people with the economic resources there.
But I'm talking about the ones that are not giving back. If you know that there's a company that gives, I mean, half of everything back to help the Black colleges, help Black communities with, you know, bringing Whole Foods into your community, fruits and vegetables that are, yeah, why would you want to destroy that? But I'm talking about a company that's, you know, suppressing you and oppressing you, get it out of here. Get it out. No, we don't want you here. If you know, in the United States, we have those companies, you know, that
red zone,
what is it called? Redlining, red zoning, you know?
Pretty much every corporation in the United States is doing stuff like that. I don't know any benevolent, well, not any large corporations, but I mean, you know, I don't know. So I guess we'll see if we have a trend of more Black professors in light of what happened with Dr. West, in light of this professor, what was her name? Nicole Hannah-Jones. If we see more, it would be beautiful. If we see more prominent scholars saying, I'm going to HBCUs to educate my people. And then I know they keep talking about the athletes. Is that a possibility? Is that a thing? Or
it is starting. No, it is literally starting. They are saying, and it's for so many reasons I just found out, that they are coming back home. It's so many reasons. They're saying that they were trying to make some of the African-American brothers feminine, making them do feminine things. And they're like, no, we're not losing our masculinity messing around with y'all. So, you know, I mean, this is just what I'm hearing on social media.
Okay.
Everything with a grain of salt. But from what I'm hearing on social media, this is why some of the brothers are returning back home to their home base, you know.
I'm all for it. Come back for whatever reason you need to come back, just come back and let's get it popping. Because, you know, we're going to have all the best football, basketball, all the best teams, because we have such athletic prowess. And so it just would be good if we could reunite like that.
Beautiful.
And then, like I always say, get those hotels and stuff. Just get our own stuff. We don't have to be discriminated against. We don't have to have you kicking us out of your restaurant. Let's just focus on what can we build among ourselves, but let's don't concentrate everything in one little area.
No.
Let's spread out so that they can't just wipe us out, you know, in one fell swoop. No, we're not all over there. Some here, some there, some everywhere. See,
that's how I feel about, like, I'm pro-Black, but I'm not trying to push out any other race. It's just like, if you want to come, you got to respect, you know, like your dollar has to be in our community. Your medicine has to be, your fruits and fine vegetables and education has to be in our community. You can't say, well, we're keeping it for ourselves anymore. Like, I just think that's not knowledge-based. You know, there are great Asian scientists.
That's such a mature position to have. I don't have that position because we have been at the bottom of the totem pole for so long. Mm-hmm. My thing is, get away from us. Let us get it together and raise up to a level where we can communicate and negotiate with you on a level playing field. It's really hard to get yourself together when other people are always in your mix. We just need some time to get it together. But I think your attitude is very mature. And hey, you know, I do see
other races or other nationalities fighting with us in this trench, you know, and I guess my sympathy doesn't go out that far, but if it does go further than, you know, most people, it goes to, you have some people out here who are really like, I mean, when I read the comments, I mean, these people are like, are you kidding me? Like, how come I did not know this? You know, why didn't my parents tell me this? Why didn't they teach me this in school? And that's where I fall, like, you probably wouldn't even be the way you were, or you wouldn't even act the way, or you could change history if we tell you and teach you how.
Yeah, I don't feel that we need to do that, but I just say there's room for everybody. The mm-hmm. only thing I will say is I have seen and been reminded of those people who are really for us from other races, but why can't they do something over there? Why is it always such a problem when Black people want to do something by themselves? There are Jewish schools and temples and stuff. Every other group can do whatever they want. As soon as we start doing stuff, everybody's having a friggin' cardiac arrest. Go over there and help us and let us get it. I just want us to have some space to get our house in order. But anyway, we're done. Next topic, 15 minutes, designer clothing.
Yay!
I wanted to talk about that because if you, you know, there was a time when pretty much that's all I ever really bought was designer clothing, and not necessarily always with a logo on it. There are things you'll look at and they have the label on the inside you would never know. Uh-huh. But nowadays I am so anti logo designer clothes. Like if I see something and it might've been cute, I'll be like, I'm not about to go walking around as a free advertising board for Michael, I don't even want to name them, for whoever these designers are. This is not what I'm going to do. And so I'm like really anti-logo designer. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel. I think it might be okay if it's a designer and there's not logo everywhere and it's just something they made and I get it for a good price, because that's another thing I'm not doing. Mm-hmm. I'm no longer going to pay you five times the price for the same leather bag, the same sweater that costs one-fifth of the price just because your designer company made it. I'm not on board with any of that, but I used to be, if you look in my closet, most of that stuff is designer clothing. I am not going to do that anymore.
That's, well, I'm not there yet. My dreams are still designer down. I love designer. I mean, I'm not a label person. And I'm one thing for certain. I do not wear anyone who is once rumored, but then it has been proven to have said something racist about us wearing or drinking or eating their product. I will not. They will never get my money.
I don't really know.
If you are racist, you better keep it to yourself if you want my dollar, because I will not. And that one with the MC, no.
MC?
MK? I didn't even want to say the original, the real last.
Yeah, I remember the boot. Let's go like this. I remember the boots. Mm-hmm. I remember the American designer from New York that we all were wearing. And they say it's a rumor, but they say he just flat out said it.
Yeah.
I remember somebody connected with Anderson Cooper who said it. There are like maybe four or three that I know of, but I have a feeling you know more than I do.
You're right. And when that happened, those people who you just named, I will never buy into that attire.
I wouldn't even wear it if they give it to me.
No, I couldn't.
If they just give it to me, I'll be like, pass. I don't need it.
No, thank you. But yeah, once it's been rumored and then it's been proven, and I know this one company, very large company, I won't say the name, but it was rumored that they had done something, but it wasn't the company. It was someone who they hired that worked there who just was really trying
to. I remember. It was horrible.
And that person literally came there to try to sabotage that company because it was.
I've never heard the follow-up.
Yeah, once they did the investigation and found out that that person came in the company, did what they did to work their way into that position just to sabotage that company for another company. Literally. And so
I never heard the backstory that you're telling, but I remember there was a visual like, oh my God, they didn't do that, did they?
And I even knew that was too much. So I knew it had to be something behind it. So I stayed on it just because I really liked that company. And then when I found, I said, I believe that. I believe that.
The CI was boycotting them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. And the reason why, because people do that to me on social media. People will come onto my page, complain, and try to cancel me. And I did nothing to get canceled at all. And they normally fix it and rewrite the wrong that someone, but people who will look at my content and they will say on their page, she doesn't deserve to have the followers. She doesn't deserve to have the likes. And I'm just like, flat out. You said that. You really said that. You came out your mouth and said, I don't deserve something.
That you created.
That I created.
You built that. So, can they build it? Do they have a similar platform?
I can never figure out how someone actually thought if I am removed or someone else is removed, that's going to make a place for you. That's not how it works. They're not looking for you. So why are you doing this?
Right.
I mean, I don't know.
They are looking for you. Go build your own, but don't try to tear down mine. How about that?
Clearly they can't. Clearly they can't build their own. So I know that there are people out there that will try to sabotage someone else's content just because.
And you're saying that at the time when it occurred, you knew that it was so blatant that it couldn't be what we thought it was?
Yeah, it couldn't.
The company didn't give a good response. Mm-hmm. The company did not give a good response to make us feel okay about it.
I think the campaign of the response wasn't as wide as it should have been. And I'm assuming that had something to do with branding, but it tanked. Like their stock dropped drastically. It did not have an impact. Like it wasn't like, well, maybe, you know, no bad press is really bad.
Oh, no
like,
press no. is bad press. Yeah.
No. It was bad. It was bad. So definitely they definitely, you know, explained and apologized, got rid of that person and tried to move forward with better branding. But I think they're still wounded from it, but you know what I mean?
So you're still into designer clothes? That's still your thing?
I am still into gold. I mean, gold jewelry.
Gold jewelry, you mean?
Gold, like,
well, that's different.
Real gold jewelry. And I'm still into designer everything. Shoes, frames, clothes. I'm not even like a label person either. Like I
used to be.
Like, this is a label shirt that I have on, but you wouldn't even know it because it's art. You know what I'm saying? So I liked it for the art of it, but no, I'm not a label. I don't believe.
Why is it that you're still? What is it? Not even why. What is it that is so appealing to you about the designer brands?
I like the quality. I've always liked the quality. I like the pieces that they do have. I like what it goes. I mean, what you can pair it with, or you can wear something really inexpensive and pair it with something really expensive, and that whole outfit looks high end. I mean, I'm one of those people, because I will wear a, you know, $500 pair of shoes with a $10 shirt and $5 pair of pants, and the whole outfit looks like, you know, it costs over $2,000. So
there is something to be said about quality. I will say that I do like the feel of things and the way they lay, like the silhouette,
yeah,
how they flow and stuff. But I'm gonna have to, well, again, I said I haven't really fully formed it, but I'm telling you, if there's an emblem or a print or whatever, I'm not buying it. Now, if it's in my closet, mm-hmm, it would be pretty foolish of me to just not wear it, yeah, or use it. So yeah, I will, but I will not add anything else with a visible designer logo on it.
Now, my kids are like that. My kids don't, I mean, they might buy like maybe one pair of designer shoes to go with stuff.
They don't like the purses?
But they like the purses, but they don't even spend that. Like I've pretty much bought, and I think I bought all their purses for them, but I think my daughter bought like a Tory Burch purse, but it was, I'm not even sure if it's real. It might even be a knockoff.
That's okay.
But
knockoff, I don't care.
Right.
At the time, you can't
that's the type of labels they like and or she likes, but they don't really, they like the boutiques that you see on, you know, the
internet boutiques.
Yeah, the
pop-up. My daughter likes those too, and she looks quite fly with, yeah, those clothes on. I'm all for it. But she shops the way I shop. So we used to do the designer thing, but she does. I don't see her fooling with it too much. My son has never cared, as long as the outfit looks good. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, he
that's
has
my his son.
Own style. As long as it flows, he could care less about a label. So
I have literally bought my son like the most expensive pair of shoes. You know, I try to give him like expensive shoes for like holidays and birthdays and stuff, but he will not. He is the Walmart, you know.
Well, my son won't go to Walmart, but he doesn't care about designer.
He is he will shop at like the Goodwill, the consignment.
Well, nice.
Oh my, he does not believe in spending money on. Like he bought this really nice coat, winter coat. It was wool, but it was really nice. And he's like, Ma, I got this for $10. And when I looked it up online, the original price was like $450. I'm like, wow, where'd you get it?
I don't know if my son's still doing it, but in my mind, he was spending a heck of a lot of money. He does not care if it's designer, but he likes to dress well, and he will spend his money on that.
Very nice.
So, thank you. So yeah. I'm hoping that he is not as into that. There was a time when he was just buying it, you know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully he has slowed down, but at least it's not designer. At least it's his own aesthetic, and you know, that's okay.
You never know where it might, you know, lead him, you know.
Who knows what these kids might end up doing? Their future is so wide open. Whatever you start off with, you may end up in that lane. You may end up in another lane. I don't know.
I love fashion. I love designer clothes. I love it all. I'm a fan.
And that's okay. Fan. I mean, I love that you're being straight up 100 about it, but it's a moral conscious thing for me. Like, I'm just not going to participate. Now, perhaps if I have the option of knowing some really great Black designers, I'm not a big fan of Kanye's aesthetic. Mm-hmm. But if I knew more Black designers, remember we used to have Carl Kanai and all that. I knew some more Black designers, I think I might be willing.
Carl Kanai, Fat Farm, Baby Fat, all of those.
Oh yeah, remember I used to wear Baby Fat and Fat Farm.
Yeah,
used to wear Rockaware,
mm-hmm.
FUBU. They were all urban. Mm-hmm. You know who's a really good, I don't know anymore, but who used to be a top Black designer that was slept on?
Let's take a short sponsor break. Now back to the current episode.
Sean Puffy Combs.
Oh,
he
was
out there winning awards, mm-hmm, with haute couture. Mm-hmm. He was rocking the game, but you know, I don't know where it's, I just am out of that now. I have gradually gotten out of it anyway. And now with my whole mentality, I just feel it's not the thing that I should do.
Like I am, I'm never gonna go broke for anything. That's just not my style as far as buying anything. If I have it to spare, I will get it. I will never try and go make it just to get something. That's never gonna be it.
So, try and go make it? What do you mean?
Like, you know how someone will actually like, you know, sell, you know, something extraordinary to go buy something. I would never do that.
You know what is really would be nice? Because I do like fashion. Mm-hmm. And so one of my favorite shows, which I haven't seen any seasons of,
Project Runway.
If I could get some of those young designers, they kill the game. I don't need an established designer. If I can get some of them to get me some innovative, you know, fashions, I would do that in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
In a heartbeat.
There was quite a few.
Well, I'm glad that we did talk about that and that we see that we're still in, you know, that we're in two different places there. But I think that, you know, people are where they are and it's okay. We're different. And so I think that's all right. All right. So with a minute and a half left, I guess we can move on to our last and final topic, which is date culture. Among, in my mind at least, among African Americans, but I'm willing, of course, to extend that to anybody you want to discuss it about. But I think that our African American males, I don't want to talk about all of them, but I want to talk about the majority of them who have sucked up the programming and drank the Kool-Aid. In fact, I'm starting to see on social media other Black males checking their brethren saying, you guys have been so busy doing what mass media has told you, dogging women, trying to run game on a harem, always talking about doing your brother or some other man's woman. And now it's devolved to the point that you got the Megan, the Stallions and all them talking about running game on brothers. And then they're saying, now you want to be upset, but you've been doing this to them for so long. Why didn't you think that they would turn around and do it to you? I just think that we need our men to put down the foolishness and raise up and be men. Some of the things that I see people going through when they're trying to date our men, even older men, not just 20-year-olds, 40, 50-year-old fools. And I'm like, what is wrong with you guys? I'm at a loss for what is happening. Again, not all of them, but many, very many.
I mean, I'm a witness. I believe that we have lost, and once again, I think it's a fairy tale out there for these men, because on social media that pops up on their phone, I literally got a text today that said, meet me for casual sex.
Sent that to you?
Someone from like a mass site, I guess, it literally said, meet me for casual sex, and it was .com. So I was like, when I clicked on it, because I wanted to forward it to the FBI, I clicked on it and there was a woman that said, fill out this information and you to continue on and you could be find locals in your area. And I thought that was the sickest thing I'd ever seen. That I was like, how does this even? And it was like 15 numbers attached with no name to this. Like I was in a group text with 15 other numbers, and I was just like, how did my number even generate? So I text, you know, this will be sent to the FBI. And I did forward it to the FBI, like I do. I know they get sick of me, but I was like, this is getting sent to the FBI.
So I sent to the FBI all the
always.
Time.
Oh, I know they're sick of me. And I said, do not ever send anything like this to me ever again. You're sick and perverted. So I sent that. So I didn't get any more texts.
With that though, one thing, as soon as you said that to me, it alarmed me, because that kind of thing can be used to set people up for sex trafficking or human trafficking.
You think?
For sure. Really, like snatching
people. I believe that too.
Because also, though, there is a hookup culture, mm-hmm. And I think when I first learned about it was with Tinder and stuff. So that also could be a social media site that is for hooking up. But I would just be concerned about.
That's what I'm saying has desensitized. It's not just even pornography anymore. It is desensitized because there are apps now where a man can just plug in and say he wants the hookup, he wants oral sex, he wants anal sex, he wants sex, and just get it. I don't know if he has to pay for it or some horny woman is out there desperate for it, but it's sick and it's messed up women in their relationships that want a good man, and it's messed up good men who used to be good men, but they're acting like dogs now. Like, when a woman gets a really good man who's solid and is like, look, I'm letting you know I am not about that life, you still sit there and think like,
How many times have we heard of some sister we know who met a brother who gave them that whole story?
Yeah.
And they let their guard down and gave the brother the benefit of the doubt. And then he's just typical dog.
As trifling as the rest of them. You've got preachers, pastors, clergy, you've got people who are supposed to be of the cloth are in on all of this stuff. You know, you're like, you're on gay sites. You're a married man in the church, and then the world wants you to be like, oh, we need to be more accepted. I'm not going down that road with you. I'm not going
to
be.
I just think that Black men need to be willing to have a one-on-one relationship, or they need to be upfront and honest and say, I don't want that, and I'm going to have, you're going to have to share me, because you know why? Some women will share them.
Oh, they have polyamory.
And the women who are not willing to do that, give them the opportunity to say, look, I have a girl, I have had friends where the man is professing to be so into them, all this and that, and then won't even really call.
I've had friends on dating apps that have told me that same story, that they met this guy. Oh my God, he seems so nice. And then I'm like, okay, well, what was up with so-and-so? He hasn't called in weeks. I'm like, what? But he was all over her the night they dated and the night they called, and then just fall right off. I'm like, how emotionally detached do you have to be? There was no, you know, hey, look, this is not working. I mean, I went back to my so-and-so, or, you know, I don't want to lead you on, but no, there's just, they just, what they call leave it on red. My kids say, leave them on red.
Yeah, my kids say that. You know, I think just for me personally, I think a big part of it is the media.
I agree.
I think a big part of it, if you watch any of those reality shows, every man on there, matter of fact, I stopped watching some of them because every brother on there was a cheater, was trying to run game. Every rap song is about effing your B. I effed your B and I didn't even know her. I got hoes in every area code and all that. And so they have made Black men think that it's exceptional to be running game on women. And what they're doing is destroying the men and the women and the families, because how can you win when your men are behaving in that manner?
That's why I know when a lot of people see me and my family as a couple in a relationship, I never want to give people like a fake picture of my life. I let everyone know that it is horribly a struggle trying to keep this Black family together. It is beyond a struggle, but it's so many demons. I'm not saying my friends and my loved ones, but when I say the world outside of that bubble is not for us. They don't want to see it. They have tried so many. I'm a thoroughbred and I'm born that way. So I haven't had anyone try to tear me apart and try to come at me. I believe they've tried to go after my husband so many times, and I'm not calling him weak, but he's the weaker one of us. And
so he's the weaker one.
He's giving them the time in the day. You know, I don't give anybody the time in the day. You know, as soon as I even think you might be going in that direction, I will cut you off. I have no problem with that. That means nothing to me. I mean, girlfriends, anyone, I will cut you off if I even think that you're going in that direction. And I mean, I have
in the direction of what? Trying to your family.
Break, not just breaking up, but trying to separate me. You know what I mean? Trying to separate me. Like, I love support. I love my support system. I have a fantastic girlfriend support system with you and my friend Talisa and Tammy. Excellent. They, y'all know exactly how I feel at the moment I'm talking. And I have other girlfriends, well, I had other girlfriends who would capitalize off of that, you know? And it's like, no, don't do that to me. I'm not that person, you know? Like, don't kick me while I'm down. Like, I need you to just hold me up. Let me know I got this. Let me know whatever decision I'm going to make, you got my back. Don't,
right.
Okay, because I know I'm a ride or die. You know, right. I'm a ride or die with everything you want to do. If you want to go put a snicker in his gas tank, we can do that.
You want to stay and work it out, we can make that happen.
You want to get a hotel room, you want to put the roses on the bed for you, I will do that for you. Whatever you want, I'm riding with you.
Right.
Because I know it's not easy trying to maintain a relationship.
Right.
I mean, you're two totally different people with totally different cells and DNA, and then you got this world we live in who's not supportive of relationships.
And constantly attacking. And you know, I do hear the undercurrent too. There is a whole subclass of women who, I do not know what is wrong with them, but it appears that if a man is married, then they are even more, they may not want him if he were single.
No, they don't.
He's married. I don't know if it's an ego trip. I don't know what it is.
It's all of the above. It's literally, oh, he's married. How dare he be married and I'm not. And how dare she's able to have something I don't. And then there is, I just want whatever's left over. So if she's nagging or if she's tired or if she's not there for him, I want to pick up those pieces and run with them. It's like, are you freaking crazy?
But you know what? I did have a relative tell me she was dating a married man, which I never condoned, but you know, she's grown. And so she said, she told him, well, he wasn't married. He was living with a woman. So he wasn't married, but he was in a relationship. And she said, she told him, don't leave her. Because, you know, she said, Kim, I've already had all that. I don't want to wash his clothes. I don't want to cook his meals. I don't want to do that. When I see him, I want us to go out, have a great time, spend money, whatever, and go on back home to her for all of that BS that I don't want to do.
I've heard women say that to me as a married woman. I've heard, and I said, how sick are you? Who the hell wants you up on their man's private parts? What, are you sick? Like, I don't want that. No, you, right. You gonna take all of that. You gonna right. get it whether you want it or not, because I don't want it. Like, that to me is just, I never would be accused, and I've never would do, I've never wanted another woman's man, ever.
As soon as you come out that you got a woman in the background, because for one thing, I believe in karma. I don't want that karma. And I feel like when I'm in a relationship where I'm really vibing and having a great time, the last thing I want is that kind of crap coming back and some woman trying to interfere with that.
I would tell a couple of women that. I'm like, boy, when you decide to fall in love, you do know that your day is coming. You know, there was this woman who I never will forget. It was many, many years ago, but this woman was on her deathbed and the other woman would come into the room with the husband. And I used to say to her, why are you doing that? I'm like, that, well, she doesn't know I'm there. I said, I'm gonna just let you know, don't you never get sick. Don't you never, ever, ever, ever get sick. Cause he already let you know what he's gonna do to you. It's gonna be even worse.
They do say that whatever he did with you, now my grandmother used to say that whatever he does with you, he will surely do it to you.
Oh yeah.
So if he does that with you to that other woman, baby, was gonna come a day when he will do it to you.
Absolutely.
Somebody else.
And yeah. I always said that would be your measurement of a man if he even allowed that. Like, that doesn't even, you don't look at him and think like, well, he did that to her, but I'm too good. He will never do.
Really? That's not how it works.
Don't you think? That's not how it works.
But you know, I just think that as a general principle, we need more, and I've been seeing it on YouTube and whatever places, I don't know, TikTok, everywhere, really, some very conscious brothers saying we need to reevaluate the way we think about and treat our women, and we are misguided. The things that we think make us so much of a man actually don't. They make us of no value to our women and our children.
I need to, because I would listen to Derek Jackson, I would send my husband all kind of posts that he would post. And I'm like, you need to be like this man. He's got it going on. And come from love, he was swinging low and riding high. Like, are you kidding? And he laughed at me. He was like, that's your boy, Derek Jack. No, why you don't send me no more texts with him? I'm like, oh, Lord. I haven't sent him any more. I'm like, okay.
That's hilarious.
So embarrassing. And I literally said to him, I was like, you are an embarrassment. I do not ever accept an apology from you. I cannot even believe you would deceive people like that. We literally thought we had one on our side. So now, I mean, I know, you know, Kevin, you know, Sam.
Girl, I don't even watch him. But I'm talking about some conscious brothers who are talking about the spiritual impact of mating with a man with a woman, of connecting, and just saying that the power is between that union.
I agree.
I don't know what Derek Jackson was saying, so I don't know if he was going down that road or if, I don't know.
He was.
He was trying to be conscious with it?
He was very conscious. He spoke conscious. He had knowledge, and people would confide in him, and he would tell them how the issue should be and what a woman should feel and how it should. And he literally had us all going. And I did not think he was attractive. And I kept telling my husband there was nothing attractive. It was his words and his knowledge that I thought.
You didn't think he was attractive?
I didn't. That's not my.
I thought he was. See, I never heard a word about him until he got outed. I never followed him. I didn't know. And when I saw, I was like, yeah, well, you know, he's a good looking brother, but there are a lot of good looking brothers. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to have a good body or, you know, have somebody. There are a lot of brothers like that. I mean, like, I don't want any of that F boy stuff in my life.
Right.
I just don't. I'd rather just not. But yeah, I do see the sister struggling because even the ones who seem like nerdy or geeky, mm-hmm. it's like a whole mentality that all the brothers think that they have to be running game on women.
And my thing is this, if like you were saying with the soul ties, I really believe that when you lay down with so many different people and those that fluid is exchanged, it definitely messes up your soul tie. And I really believe that. And I think you can break it. You know, you can break it in a marriage and you can break it in a relationship. And I don't believe you get it back. I don't know what period that you have to go through or what you have to do to get it back. But I think once you break a soul tie with someone, I don't think that you and that person can ever get that back. I mean, that's just my belief.
I know that the spiritual people say there are some things you can do, but the one thing you got to do is cut it out.
Yeah.
You have to cut out that behavior, tame your eye, and then maybe one could work on that. But you can't get rid of it and still be doing the same daggone thing.
I've spoken to a lot of elderly couples about, you know, how did they stay married and dating, and pretty much all of them have that same pattern. You have to learn to forgive. You shouldn't ever go to bed mad, and you've got to be able to communicate. And I'm like, I don't know. I think it's a little bit more than that. I think spiritually you have to connect.
Well, there's our timer. So we've hit all four of our topics. And so that does it for this episode. Are there any parting words that you want to share before we wrap?
No, I just love the way we're doing this now. I think it is a lot smoother and we're able to hit on a lot of different topics. So a lot of people will be able to have a lot of things to, you know, hear us say and have our opinion on.
That's great. I feel the same way. I think it's refreshing and new and I'm enjoying it. And I just like to take a moment to thank everyone for joining us as always in our podcast.
Thank you. And I want to close by saying thank you for kicking it with Kim and Tora. Please like, subscribe, and definitely pass it on. Tell everyone to join us.
Okay.
See you next time.